Welcome to... Hey, great shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. On today's show, we've got another edition of The Deciding Point, our weekly breakdowns of everything happening in the Division I college tennis world. Of course, here on Tuesday nights, we break down the Division I women's action. Week 10 of the 2024 season now officially in the books. Oh my goodness, did this past weekend deliver? We had so many 4-3 results to touch upon, a few significant upsets, significant conference bouts to discuss as well. But more broadly, we have a fantastic week of college tennis to catch all of you fans up on. Of course, that's what we plan on doing here on today's show, breaking down all of the biggest results in case you missed out on anything from the past week. Of course, we also want to talk about the most recent rankings, both the ITA rankings and, that's right, our Cracked Rackets rankings as well. New rules have been instituted. We'll have our rankings for all of you listeners on each and every edition of our Deciding Points moving forward. Of course, then we'll preview the week ahead so that all of you fans are prepared for what promises to be another exciting 7-day stretch in the college tennis universe. Of course, joining me on today's show to help break it all down is the man who joins me each and every week on this podcast, a man you all know best as the returning champion of returning champions here at Cracked Rackets. He's the founder of the No Ad, No Problem blog and podcast. Of course, my co-host on every week's Deciding Point podcast, our on-the-ground correspondent throughout the course of this college tennis season. It's my dear friend, John Jay Parsons, joining us on the show once again. Jay, hey, great shot. Welcome back. You were on the road in Athens. You got to see the new indoor facility before just about anyone else. Have you recovered a few days later, my friend? Not just from that, from a 4-3 thriller, from the woes of travel fatigue. How are you feeling, my friend?
Well, I was going to say the airlines really tried to take me out of it on my flight returning. But other than that, I had a fantastic weekend in Athens. Everything other than that return flight, where I think I was just this close to having a door taken off of my plane. But yeah, it was a fantastic weekend. The indoor facility looks great. So I'm excited to be back in Athens for 2026 NCAAs. But overall, a great weekend. I know we'll talk about the Georgia women's match. Fantastic match, but great weekend in Athens. Thanks to everyone who came up and said hello, and the hospitality from everyone at Georgia. It was great.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Drake and the entire Georgia program as well. It means a lot to me that you were treated well, so I'm really happy to hear that. And look, they're a first-class program. There's a reason they are the blue blood of blue bloods we have in college tennis. Obviously, some new coaches on the horizon. Drake coming last season. Obviously, we've got Jamie coming next season on the men's side. But yeah, certainly, again, that's a place to be around if you are a college tennis fan, and I look forward to hearing your reflections, not just on all things Athens, but obviously on the tennis you saw there as well, because, oh my goodness, was Friday night's matchup between Georgia, Texas A&M, everything you hoped it might be all the way back in December. But Jay, before we get to breaking down any of the results we've seen over the course of the past week, we had some significant news emerge from the college tennis universe, news that I think will, dare I say, transcend just college tennis. I think will grow to impact all non-revenue or Olympic sports, perhaps more broadly moving forward. And that, of course, was the announcement coming via, I believe, Sam Ehrlich, that there's a new antitrust lawsuit against the NCAA. This one, according to his tweet, filed by lead plaintiff and UNC tennis player Reese Brantmeyer on behalf of a proposed wider class that challenges the NCAA's prohibition on college athletes playing in outside competitions with prize money. Now, we're not going to read the complaint. For all of you listeners here today, I highly recommend you go check out Sam's profile. He has the complaint listed available on there. I've retweeted it. Jay's retweeted it, so you can certainly find it on our Twitter feeds as well. There will certainly be more academic commentary upon the lawsuit, certainly to come as more details emerged, as arguments become refined. But Jay, obviously with the introduction of NIL, the introduction of revenue or profit being offered to these athletes, the premise that has existed within college tennis for quite some time, that these athletes' amateur status is compromised with them playing pro tennis events and receiving prize money from those events. That is what Brantmeyer is questioning, saying, hey, athletes are receiving revenue in one stream. Why is it because us Olympic athletes have to go about finding revenue this way? You're going to ban us from making that sport, and we compromise this ever-changing definition of amateurism that seems to never be truly locked in. It's going to be a fascinating argument. Now, one person also, though, did frame it to me a very fascinating way, Jay, and it's this idea that, you know, when Rhys Brantmeyer plays in the U.S. Open, that would be the equivalent of Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback, lining up for the Rams for 2 weeks. And it's not as straight of a comparison as one would hope to make, in the sense that those are professional events. And in the idea that amateur athletics is meant for amateurism, it's meant as a step before you proceed to the professional ranks. It's going to be a fascinating argument. Now, longtime listeners, you know where I stand. Why should these players be prevented from making the money that they have earned with their labor, with their results? My mom, I was going through all the hypotheticals with her. That's how you know I'm home. I was surprised how radical she was in her belief, or she was, you know, I gave her the scenario of, well, okay, like, you know what? I love him. Because I was like, well, let's say Tony Breschke convinces Novak Djokovic, like, come get your Wake Forest degree, dude. Like, play for us for 4 years. You're done with your pro career. You're going to have this degree when you're done. I'm not going to lie. I didn't say Tony Breschke. I said Harvard, because that really feels like the only sort of degree that would make sense to draw Novak Djokovic back into the realm. Like, would that be acceptable to you? And my mom goes, hell yeah, it would be. It's like, let's raise the level of the sport. How does that not draw interest? If Djokovic is playing for Michigan, I'm going to all the matches. I was like, Mom, let's go. But it's a fascinating, fascinating decision, obviously. Fascinating. Something we will have to monitor moving forward, Jay. I know you and Ethan are going to do a full conversation about this on the No Ad, No Problem podcast. Worth noting, Ethan, a law student, probably has some astute observations that I will not be able to provide alongside of you here today. So highly recommend all of our listeners go check that out. But what was your reaction to this and your read on it all?
Well, I think you summarized the case pretty well. I think what's interesting about this is this does start to erode away at this allegation of amateurism. And what does that look like? But it feels like the momentum with how litigious things are right now against the NCAA, certainly momentum is on the side of quickly careening towards a world of no rules. Like the example you gave of saying, the way we're moving, it feels like that is where we might end up. Now, it's worth noting to your point that this is an organization that in some ways does need to be able to set the parameters for what is and isn't allowed. And I think in the complaint, Rhys and her lawyers make a strong argument for the hypocrisy that exists. But it's going to be interesting to see where this nets out. You can just see how fine grain the NCAA has been in evaluating your expenses. There's one example that is very notable in the complaint, which talks about stems on her hotel in New York. And the NCAA says essentially, when you expense as part of this pro prize money, you can only expense for yourself. They do not believe that a hotel room that she split with her mother at 16 years old, that she should have split that 50% rather than deducting the entire hotel room, which to any common sense is absolutely outrageous. She can't be in a hotel room at 16 years old by herself. What is she to do? And so there are those nonsensical things that I think really hurt the NCAA's legitimacy in making a case for what those rules want to look like. And the reason we're careening towards this no rules environment is because the NCAA has been pretty vacuous in providing leadership around what they want those rules to look like that are common sense and do make sense for all parties involved.
It's very well said. It's also worth noting, again, in regards to our beloved tennis, it is not a revenue sport. It is not high on the priority list in terms of arbitrating proper rules and proper regulations for all of these players. And look, we remember the teams very well who were accused in the 2000s, the early 2010s, of bringing in these 24 to 26-year-olds, and their teams were always 4 years older than more American-centric teams. And was that disrupting the spirit of college tennis and disrupting the rhythm of the sport? Was it disrupting progress within the sport and disrupting it as a pathway towards the pros? I think the answer to that is unequivocally no. I think you see, you know, again, all these players who have come over, who get exposed to this level, it's just a net benefit for the sport. The more talent you can bring into college tennis, the better it is for everyone involved. Obviously, that's been my longtime position, but it's not the same. It, like, to profit from a pro event in tennis is not the same argument as profiting off of your image and being able to be sponsored by a company. Now, again, if Reese's argument was my Nike sponsorship or my Wilson or Head or Babolat sponsorship, whatever racket equivalent you want to be, I should be able to carry that with me through the season. They should be able to provide me these things now moving forward, because that feels like that's an NIL-centric thing, maybe more so than a specific pro result. At the same time, it's just so different within our sport, because these athletes aren't playing the U.S. Open every week. They're not going and making $250,000 then coming back to school. Oftentimes, you go and play 6 weeks in Monastir, like during between now and the start of the next college season. You probably lost money over the course of those 6 weeks personally. And so let's say you won all six. Let's say you come out of there with, I mean, the thing is, it's a $10,000 limit, right? So you're not going to do that in Monastir. But the point is, like, do raise the money limit and say, this is how much you can now make as a tennis athlete. Is that the middle ground compromise? Do you open the door entirely and say, you're right, you should be able to profit off of this, because kind of is your name and your image and your likeness. It's freaking you out there playing the sport. It's fascinating. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it all unfolds. I'm really looking forward to see how the arguments change, by the way, as point and counterpoint is made, because I do think there are some valid arguments on both sides, as much as it pains me to say that.
Well, yeah, final things here is I did think the complaint talked about how there are Olympic sports that are providing money to athletes in the form of grants that are accepted by the NCAA. And so if the USTA were to give this money as a grant to these players rather than as prize money, that would be accepted by the NCAA. So they talk about some of these differences in how the NCAA treats what revenue or money you can and can't take. And it's going to be interesting to see how, if the NCAA respond, when the NCAA responds, obviously they'll first just move to dismiss. But after that, as the arguments go back and forth, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But finally, I do just want to commend Reese Brantmeyer for moving forward with this.
Absolutely.
This is a very courageous
fight we've needed to have.
Absolutely. And there's really no better person to take this on. You know, we have a recent example, this doctor eligibility. It prevented her from collecting $35,000. And that could be money that she could be using right now as she is forced to sit out with a season-ending injury. So it's a courageous thing for her to do. She knows this is not, she's not seeking monetary damages here. She knows this is not going to resolve itself in the period of her collegiate playing days. This is to move forward the sport. And if this helps future athletes, it's a great thing.
Absolutely. Very well said. And certainly, again, something we will provide updates on as more information becomes available. But wanted to lead the show with that, because that's the sort of storyline that will impact the sport moving forward in ways we can't quite measure yet. Of course, things we can measure are results we saw over the course of the past week. So that's where we will now move to as we recap week number 10 of the 2024 college tennis season. Jay, it was a very, very fun weekend of play, and we could start in a bunch of different locations. There were that many compelling 4-3s. I almost went out on a limb and put at the top of our outline, I want to talk exclusively Miami's weekend, even though they were 4-1 results at the clinch over Louisville and Notre Dame, respectively. Each of those matches were 3 hours in length, and again, I happened to be on the call for both of them, so I could give you an opening 15 minutes on both. Instead, though, I think we have to start in Athens with the thriller. Yes, let me repeat, thriller that goes the way of Georgia 4-3. I could tell you all the storyline, folks, or we could talk to a man who is on the grounds for it. Jay, I kick things over to you. Tell us what happened in this 4-3 affair.
Well, I certainly don't have the time to go through it all, but if you want to listen, I did recap it that night. So you can listen to that on the No Ad, No Problem podcast. But this is now a pretty storied rivalry in the SEC. These two teams have been at the top of the SEC the past 3 years, really in the post-COVID era. And we have been treated with some delightful 4-3s over the course of that rivalry. This match, for me, it's the best regular season match I've ever seen. And it's arguably the best match I've ever seen in person, but it's just really tough to compare regular season matches versus matches in the NCAAs when the stakes they're just different. Yeah. But this is a very interesting match between two teams that match up very differently against each other. Georgia likes their chances at 4-6. A&M likes their chances at 1-3. A&M takes a doubles point in a very closely decided doubles point. And for a good part of this match, it looked like A&M was going to pull it out. They came out very strong at 2-3. Nicole Kieran is playing excellent tennis. Mia Kupres has found a flat forehand that she didn't have last season. But Georgia did its thing in the lower half of that lineup, particularly at 5 and then 4. And then eventually Maya Rundorn gets the win at 6. And it was kind of coming down to courts 1 and 3. Dasha Vidmanova, Mel Riasco of Georgia, number 1, Mary Stoyana, and then Mia Kupres at number 3. And it all came down to a tiebreak. Mel Riasco there at the number 3 spot. And she had chances to potentially clinch. And you look over and all of a sudden, Dasha Vidmanova is down 1-5 in the third set. She's cramping. She's serving underhand. And you're like, well, whoever wins this match at 3 is going to decide who wins it. Mia Kupres wins that match in a tiebreak.
And crazy. By the way, she fought off like, or Riasco fought off like 9 match points throughout the course of those final 20 minutes.
All throughout that third set. I mean, she was down 2-5 in that third set. And so for her to come back and stay out alive, but eventually, and I'm sitting there behind court 3 and you're looking over at court 1, you're going, oh man, this is going to be over. And it's so unfortunate too, because this match is so great. But, you know, I move myself back over to court 1 once it ties up at 3-3 and Vidmanova comes back from 1-5 down in the third set. And it's kind of a blur because at every point you felt like it wasn't really going to happen. Like, it's like, okay, this is the final burst of energy. This is the final burst. But she ends up, she wins that tiebreak and clinches the match for Georgia in just a fantastic thriller. I mean, true thriller match.
Just all American all the way around. And look, there were tightly contested calls both ways. There were just, it was so good. Under the lights as well. Yeah. You can speak to the fans. You know, you could hear them in the background. Athens fans, they know how to get into it. And, you know, again, I'll leave that.
Club tennis fans. These were like a group of
the
club
best
tennis
fans.
Yeah, absolutely the best fans. The most knowledgeable fans. But they had a blast out there and they absolutely made an impact on this match.
Yeah, you know, and just, you know, again, 1-5 down against the number 1 player in the country. And Vidmanova wills her way back in that match. You know, the match point, the fact that she was cramping a half an hour earlier, and you see how far wide she got stretched for that forehand line pass on the match point, and you're like, yeah, 40 minutes ago, I thought if you would have tried that, you might have died on court. And just for her to rebound the way she did, Mel Riasco deserves more credit. Like, again, I was watching this match. Chris Halliores was on the call on ESPN Plus for us, and she just kept fighting off match points. Like, she just kept doing it, looping that lefty forehand high and heavy cross. And look, ultimately, again, that's a huge win for Stoyana on the road against an upperclassman. Kupres, thank you, not Stoyana. That's like, that is a massive, massive victory for the sophomore. But for Georgia to win 4-5-6 against this A&M team, for Georgia now to have beaten A&M twice this season, and to do it without doubles at home, like, because A&M, like, they won the doubles point. You thought, no one's winning 4. I don't care, home, away. Like, you're just not winning 4 singles matches against this Texas A&M team, right? And yet, you know, again, that Lapata over Perez 3-3 stands out. But for Gigi Grant to 1-0 Smetanikov, like, there are some questions. They had options, but who should be the 4? Who should be the 5? Who should be the 6? What should it actually look like for this Georgia team? It seems like they're riding with their upperclassmen. It does feel like at this point we're locked into, we're going to see Gigi, Mai in that 5-6 combo in some fashion. And I mean, both pull off massive victories for this one. Now, you know, on the flip side, obviously, a heartbreaker for Texas A&M, who almost suffered back-to-back heartbreakers, Jay. They escape 4-3 over Tennessee in match number two of the weekend. Begs the question, how is Mark Weaver still alive after the stress he must have felt over that 72-hour time span? But you got to see them in person, Jay. Obviously, they lose a heartbreaker on the road to bounce back on the road in the fashion they did next Sunday. Is A&M back in your inner conversation, inner circle bubble? Are they on the outside looking in, more top eight than top five? You know, top 16 instead of top eight. You got to see them in person. What was your assessment?
Well, just to emphasize that match against Tennessee, Tennessee had a dual match point. Yeah. They were up 6-5 in that. And again, it came down to a third set tiebreak this
another
time.
Another one.
Yeah. On Luciana Perez's court, she ends up winning that. I mean, Ayula had the forehand volley to win that match. But Nicole Kieran is playing excellent tennis. She's won like 11 matches in a row. She's hardly dropping sets. Mary Stroyan is still the number one player in the country. That top three is excellent.
Yeah.
Where it drops off is at 4, 5, and 6. And it four is, I'm thinking, a little iffy. Perez has lost 6 matches. 4 of those have come indoors. So I think there's like more to see there. I feel like she'll be
How was
fine.
She outdoors? Because I know she lost to Lapata, but did you see a little something there to build off of? Like, is she a grind? Is there pace there? Give us the quick scout.
No, it's a grind. Yeah. It's definitely a grind. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Lopat has been excellent. So I need to see more from her against more opponents. But I think you would rather have her at 5 or 6.
Sure.
4 is where I'm like, oh, it's getting a little tough. But 5 is a nightmare for Texas A&M right now. And 6, I think, okay. Jeanette Morales is 7-2. Those two losses have come to Gigi.
Yeah.
Sorry, to Mai. Mai. So, yeah, they're not top 8. After this weekend, I would say, but they're flirting 9-10-ish.
Sure. I think that feels about right. Again, if they're winning doubles points, they become that much tougher because they are that good in the top three. And yeah, you mentioned it. I want to see Perez outdoors. I need a bigger sample size to get a better gauge for her level. The A&M's, like, why they aren't the top five team we thought they were locked to be, Jay. Smetanikov's had a little sophomore slump. Like, there's just, you can't protect it. Like, look at the record. Look at the results. It just feels like, I don't know, is she rushing? Like, I don't know. It just hasn't been there right now for the sophomore. And again, I didn't get to see her in person at the indoors this year. Obviously, we saw her at the indoors last year and what she was capable of. She should be doing better at that number 5 spot. It feels like for us, we projected that as a massive strength for these Aggies and that it hasn't been. That's maybe why they're 9-10 instead of top 5 discussion.
Yeah, it's doubles 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Right. We didn't expect doubles to drop off as much as it did. In hindsight, we probably should have. And 4, I think we thought, you know, number 3 in the world, Luciana Perez would probably be a very good
in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
An excellent number 4, and she's not there yet. And then Smetanikov.
Yeah, for sure. But you mentioned it, really good weekend for Morales. 3 sets on the road, knocked off by Mai, but the 2-2 bounce back win. They had to find 4 singles victories against Tennessee on the road. They were able to do so. They're just a dangerous team. Like, they're a team you still have a flyer. Like, I still have a pin next to in the sense that I don't know how good they are. After a win like that, Jay, you saw it in person. And the most impressive thing for me, not only does Georgia win that A&M match after dropping the doubles point. For me, the most impressive thing is always winning 1, 2, and 3 is very cool to do. You win 4, 5, and 6. That's what separates good from great. And so I just wonder if you saw the shades of greatness that, again, we forecasted onto this Georgia team over the course of the weekend. Is it still feel like it's an unfinished product? Like, where are you with them?
Well, it's an unfinished product for sure, but I saw a lot of things I really liked. And one of the main ones is unquantifiable, but it's the fight. And
sure.
We've talked about this with this Georgia team where that can ebb and flow. Now, we've always seen it on their home courts and in front of those fans. So it'll be important for them to extend that in other atmospheres. But 4, 5, and 6, you have no questions about right now for Georgia. The spots coming into this weekend you had questions about were 1 through 3, none of whom had winning records. I think this could unlock a lot for this Georgia team. And I think the confidence that this will give Vidmanova to play a little bit more aggressive, look at some of those points she won down the home stretch, I think will be huge for her. Vekic, at some point, it's going to click for her after playing more of these college atmospheres. And Riasco's Riasco. So, you know, she's going to hang in there and be very tough for anyone. She's tough out for anyone.
We haven't talked about the Vekic piece enough. Like, she just isn't quite there yet. And look, she's a freshman. Like, let's be clear. I know she was around campus last year, but this is still her first full season of dual match play. And she was thrown to the wolves into the top three of a singles lineup. The only people who, you know, succeed in those positions are the most special players we have in college tennis history. Like, not everyone can walk in and be a Diana Schneider. Like, Lady Di is one of a kind. And so,
and she lost three matches.
Yeah, and even she lost three matches. Well said by you. Although, let me just tell you, 2023 Carol Lee hit different. And so, yeah, as the kids would say, Jay. And so, I mean, again, even Rebecca. Do you want to litigate all three? Should we go through all three quickly here? Because that you can remember them is why, again, we are who we are. But I don't know. I'm still not sold on anything. Like, I still don't know who the best unequivocal SEC team is. I still think there are a bunch of really good teams. I think Georgia is in the top tier position, Jay. I guess, let me rephrase that. I don't know if the SEC, again, it just gets back to one of our preseason takes. Is the SEC going to pop in the NCAA tournament? Is there a world where five of these teams or six of these teams make the Sweet 16 and then we see two, three sneak into that final eight because these teams are that depth? The depth is there. They are that top heavy. I feel less certain about that than I did, Jay, in December. Like, I guess that's my thing, is everyone keeps beating everyone up. And so I don't know if that means everyone's good or if no one's great, if that makes sense.
Well, I think both can be true.
Sure.
Everyone's good and no one's great.
But to what extent of the pendulum is the swing?
Yeah. I think it's not going to be surprising if the teams 4 and 5 and 6 in the SEC end up making runs in NCAAs that are above and beyond what they would be projected to do. Is there an NCAA winning team in this right now? I don't know if I see that.
Yeah, and look, the reason I bring this up, Georgia, by the way, who gets a 4-0 win over LSU in their second match of the weekend. But the reason I bring this up is because, you know, again, you kind of look at where the conference is right now and some of the results we've seen. Certainly, we got a big weekend of results for the Alabama-Auburn State of Alabama duo that we've been monitoring so closely. They had their first stumble in SEC play. Alabama, Auburn, each going 0-2 on the weekend. Knocked out by two teams who I think we both think can be pretty good when they're at their best, Jay, in South Carolina and Florida. Now, it's very clear South Carolina needed this weekend, I think, more than Florida did. And for the Gamecocks to get 5-2 win over Auburn, 4-3 win over Alabama, just speaks to that the best version of this team is top 16 frisky, and on the right day, if things are breaking right for an Ackley and an Hamner, like, they could beat anyone on the right day. On the Florida side of the equation, this is probably their best weekend of the season. This is probably the best they have looked collectively in 4-0 win over Bama, 4-1 win over Auburn, Jay. It just speaks to, again, there are a lot of top 16 frisky teams in the SEC. These are four of them. You throw Georgia, A&M into the mix, that's six. I think Tennessee still, you saw their level, like, belongs in the friskiness stage of that conversation as well. Your reaction to this Florida-South Carolina sweep?
Florida should have gone 2-0. Okay, I would actually say, had they not, that would have been a concern. Worth noting for Auburn, no Okotoyi for Auburn. She's at the Africa game, so that's unfortunate for Auburn. Good wins for South Carolina, for sure. But I think, okay, so Alabama is maybe not 13 in the country, kind of taking a step back there, but definitely a good step forward for both South Carolina and Florida, who, again, they are very much the teams I was referencing when I talk about those 4 through 6 type teams in the SEC that you might worry about come NCAA time.
I think three of these teams will finish 4 through 6. I feel pretty confident in saying South Carolina, Auburn, Alabama, Florida. That is literally that 3 through 6 grouping that, on the right day, in the right matchup, the right conditions. Again, I'm still Alabama curious. Like, I need to see them play a little bit more and where their strengths are. Like, I know how good they can be at one. And, you know, again, I'm still trying to get a feel for all of the pieces. You're right. Florida needed that weekend, but they got it. I always think it's important. We like to point out, hey, it's a big weekend coming up. When those teams deliver the big weekends, it's worth giving them the shout out. I thought that was the best weekend of the season we've seen from these Florida Gators, 4-0-4-1 respectively over. Even Okotoyi-less Auburn is still a very solid team. Good weekend in SEC play. Final thoughts?
No, still no Emily De Oliveira for Florida. She's been absent, so that's something to monitor. But they still look decent without her.
Yeah, good wins for the Gators certainly as well. Let's move over now to the ACC, Jay. What's your panic level rating for the NC State Wolfpack? Obviously, this is a team that delivered us the single most shocking result we've still seen to date of the season. Well, I guess Virginia's win over UNC the next day was more surprising. But when NC State beat UNC 4-3, even Brantmeyer-less, it was just like, all right, the season's on. Now we rock and roll. And, you know, since that moment, you know, a couple losses to Michigan, whatever, you throw out. No big deal for NC State. But, you know, now, you know, who do they lose the match to? Oklahoma, I think, on the road as well. And, you know, now they go on the road. They take the doubles point. They get definitive victory, straight sets at the 5 and 6 spots. They get knocked out by Syracuse 4-3 on Friday. And look, at Syracuse will do this to teams. We remember the Miami result last year. And, you know, again, this team is just difficult to play on the road, especially when you've been trying to make that switch outdoors. And now you're in Syracuse weather and everything's just a little bit more uncomfortable. But for them to get 3-set wins, Jay, at 2, 3, and 4, for Miyuka Kimoto to get a 6-6 win indoors over the artist formerly known as Amelia Rejecki at 1, I mean, NC State comes back. They beat BC 5-2 the next day. But, like, Sophie Abrams keeps winning first sets and then dropping matches in 3. And just, like, it feels like, you know, even the artist formerly known as Amelia Rejecki, which I'm always going to throw in case we actually are pronouncing it wrong. It's just like they haven't had, even in the win over UNC, it feels like we've yet to see the NC State has all 7 points clicking. And so I'm just curious if you have any sort of panic level for NC State if they're falling out of your top 8 conversation.
I feel like I reserve the panic button for teams that I think 100%. Are going to win the NCAAs.
100%.
So I don't really have the panic button on the NC State desk this season, but oh my God, this is the most shocking result of the season for them to lose to Syracuse.
Hold on. We were both there when the shell of North Carolina, that's the single, walking in to Nielsen, to Nordstrom that day was like, did a bomb go off? Like, what is happening in here?
But that is like an atmosphere environment. Like that was a shocking performance. Like that result is not as particularly after NC State just beat them in context. Like
fair,
NC State losing to Syracuse after
indoors,
getting swept at the top 4. Like 3 of them are your seniors.
Yeah,
those, by the way, are the same seniors that came in clutch for you in that UNC win. Shocking. And then the BC, I mean, you talk about it like they redeemed themselves. You're getting swept by BC at 5 and 6. Now you're just like, everyone had a bad weekend. Yeah. Because at least against Syracuse, you're 5 and 6 won. So this was a horrible weekend for NC State. Things have been looking not good for them for a little bit now. But it's kind of not totally. What I'm more surprised about is that this is not a symptom of having a bunch of freshmen in the lineup, right? Like the volatility we're seeing this season is actually from these seniors. That's what I'm most surprised by.
Yeah, that's well said. I would harp back to preseason where I think I was a little bit more tempered about this NC State team because while we knew a lot of the faces, everyone's in a new place. Like, everyone is playing in a different singles position than they ever have before. Like, Abrams is maybe the one exception, but, you know, Rejecki's up to 1. Rencelli's up to 2. Obviously, for Zirinova Zampardo, they're being asked to play in ways they never have before in their career. Even Dittman's up a spot to 5, which, again, not the biggest jump for her, but still changes there. Completely new doubles lineup as well. I thought this is the NC State we were going to see in January. And that, you're right, they beat UNC at the National Indoors, just made it feel like, oh no, this team's back on pace, they're back on schedule, no growing pains, this team is just ready to be inner circle good right away. I still think that ceiling is there. Like, I still think in a vacuum, Zampardo, even though she had a weird weekend, like, that's a piece I want to build around moving forward. If Rejeki's my one, I'm feeling really good about my chances at the number one spot every time. Obviously, Simon and David have earned the benefit of the doubt when it comes to doubles, although they just haven't been good at doubles this year. They've been, let me rephrase that. They haven't been NC State good at doubles so far this season, which is a different standard than you say for other teams of what good at doubles looks like. It's just like weird that this came 2 months into the season. Like, it's just weird that this, there seems to be some growing pains right now for these Wolfpack. I'm not hitting the panic button because this is, you know, again, this was the look ahead weekend. You have BC and Syracuse, and now this weekend they've got Duke and UNC. Like, this is the real weekend. They're at home in Raleigh. It's time to bring your best. And for what it's worth, at the National Indoors, this team was able to turn it on when they needed it. Massive weekend ahead for NC State, maybe after this weekend. I'm not willing to eliminate them from my hypothetical could win a national championship conversation, especially with a Brant Meyer-less UNC moving forward. I'm still trying to get a gauge of like how certain I am in anything at this point, Jay. Excuse me, but like, I don't know. You're right. I actually think I was trying to convey like that Boston College match was way closer than you would have expected from a scoreline perspective. I don't know. I'm not panicked for NC State. It's more like this is who I thought they'd be in January, and this is who they are in March, and it's weird.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. And so, again, it was a weird 1-1 weekend. But, you know, again, other than that, a lot of fun results to talk about. I think everything else was pretty straightforward the rest of the way, Jay. So we can go through these a little bit quicker as we still do have a bunch of different results to talk about. Here's what I have the headline saved as in my notes. Michigan clinches Big Ten? Question mark, as they earn a 4-1 victory over Ohio State in Columbus. Now, obviously, there's still a lot of conference play to go, being a little bit facetious. Do these two teams play again as well in the regular season? They home and home it? No, they don't home and home it anymore.
I think I was looking at the schedule and this is it, basically it for Michigan. Pack it up. See you in May.
Yeah. So is that it? It's like, what will be your Michigan? I mean, for both of these teams, like how tuned in will you be to either of these teams moving forward? Or was this like the last one and you're just kind of like, okay, Michigan is top eight, Ohio State's 9-16, and I'll see you in May.
I'll be as tuned in as I normally am to the Big Ten.
Listeners can't see what I'm giving him right now, but it's not a kind gesture. I mean, it's a good win for the Wolverines that they did this in Columbus as well, which is always such a tough place to play, especially if there's a block M on your chest. They are like, this team is better than last year. It's just what I'm trying to say. Like, if you're wondering, oh, is this residual effects from last year? Did this team actually take another step forward? It's the latter. One bad match against USC is the only bad match this team has played this year.
And they were, again, worth noting, down Jaden Brown.
And hungover from the indoors.
This match was much closer than 4-1. Yeah, 100%. There were a lot of very close three-set matches here that went unfinished. So, but this was a good win for them. And yeah, I mean, if I'm Ronnie, I'm just praying for some good weather and as many outdoor matches as I can get between now and postseason.
And health. Like, pitch counts, baby. I'm putting Gall on a pitch count until May. I'm like, you know what? You're playing once a weekend, and we're going to get some Reese Miller run, and we're going to get some maybe even Anna Ross run, because why not? Like, let's see what she's got in the singles tank. If
Bailey Shinen.
Bailey Shinen run as well. I try to keep it not too close to the family. Yeah, like, rest the big dogs. On a rest program, because sneakily, Michigan's schedule is loaded this year. And they've played a lot of tough matches through 10 weeks of play. Now it's like, what do swimmers do? They
tape.
Taper. Yeah. See, shout out to you, Jay. I knew you would help me get there. It's time for this Michigan team to start tapering. Like, legitimately, because, yeah, we'll see you in May. That's a really good win. Ohio State's top 16 good, by the way. Like, I think they deserve to host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, Jay. I know it's early to say, but it's Big Ten play, so their resume is kind of locked. I think they're top 16 good.
By the skin of their teeth, maybe.
All right, we can leave
for,
that
for
there.
What it's worth, I have them in my top 15.
You do right now. I wasn't going to expose you, but I was going to say you agree. So we don't even have to debate it. But I, again, you're right. Closer than 4-1. All right, State of California update. Let's rapid fire through. One, shout out to Elizabeth Begley, Eric Johnson. They're engaged. It happened in the state of California. Two friends of the show. So shout out to them. That's your State of California update number one. State of update California number two. Let's stick with the Trojans, Jay. What was their engagement gift to coach? 5-2 win over Arizona. 4-love win over Arizona State. You also had UCLA sweeping the Arizona. 6-1 over Arizona. 4-love over Arizona State. Cal. Big win for them in match number 4 of the season. They earn a 4-3 victory over San Diego. That was sarcasm, but I'm pretty sure that was match number 9 or 10 for them of this season, and that's not sarcasm. Speaking of teams we just haven't seen as much of, how about Pepperdine? 6-1 win over Cal. The Waves are very clearly top 8 good. Last but not least, San Diego did get a win on the weekend, 4-1 over SMU. Still not a, you know, that's a quality win that you'll see on the resume come the NCAA tournament. Jay, to recap, USC 2-0, UCLA 2-0, Cal beats San Diego, and Pepperdine beats Cal. Give me your State of California update.
Well, I think the Southern California schools are starting to really round into form, which is great to see. It was disappointing on the Arizona State side not to have Julia Morlay in that lineup, their number one player. So that's unfortunate for them. We had thought maybe Arizona State could get frisky with some of these schools like they did Ohio State, not to be. I think the Cal versus Pepperdine match was closer than that scoreline indicated. Pepperdine just looks so good with Janice Chen. I mean, she's looking fantastic.
The Pepperdine three of the big three, who's ever three, has lived up to the hype for three straight years.
Yeah. 100%. And I think they're looking better at 4 through 6.
100%
I thought Campania is looking solid outdoors. You know, Redlick is looking
she's
better.
She's a grind. I have trust in Nikki Redlick. She's one of those, look, is she a lock to win? No. Is she going 3 sets at a minimum? Yeah. And we're not, if we're losing the match there, it's 4-3. Like, that's right. My thoughts on Nikki Redlick. And I mean that in the kindest way possible. It's like she going to be grinding.
Yeah, and they're starting to figure out doubles, which is a great sign for them. And, I thought this would happen because you had Lisa Czar not there in the fall. So you throw her in January with a freshman. They got to have time to adjust. They're looking a lot better in doubles. So I think this Pepperdine team, I mean, they're ranked 3 this week, which is crazy. But, they're looking really strong. And I'm excited for their continued trek through the Pac-12.
Of all those teams, they have the most clear-cut path. Doubles, 1, 2, 3. And it's just they could do that to everyone. They're that good. And again, they have Chen and Brodus at the top of that doubles lineup as well. So you feel like you're up half a point. But you're right, they're playing a lot better at 2 and 3. Shout out to USC. Like, this is their best season in quite some time as well. There's been a degree of consistency from the start. This team's not losing bad matches or absent 9 players from their singles lineup either, knock on wood. Like, it's just it feels like the dominoes are finally kind of in place for Coach Swain, and it's just nice to see.
It is, and it's great to see them rewarded in the rankings. The one thing is just Naomi Chung,
sure,
been in and out of this lineup, which has been a hard part over the past few years, so you'd like to see her back as a staple in this lineup. But look, that top three is very solid. Snohan, Charney, Aaron Cayetano's been playing great this season. They're a tough out for anyone.
Can you imagine had C come back? Now you wonder, like, might this team be inner circle good? It's tough. Again, off to the Pro Tour, some of our best players go. Perhaps had she been able to keep that prize money, she would have stayed to keep it full circle. Actually, you know what? Never mind. I was going to do we'll leave that there.
We'll leave it there.
Jay. But you know who else had a, like, UCLA, again, they're my most fascinating team of 2024, 2-0 weekend. They're going to be like top 16, just like sneaky. And everyone's going to be, what? Like, it's UCLA versus North Carolina, round of 16 of the NCAA tournament. And just like in theory, those are two really big names. And you'd feel like that'd be a fun one.
You know, what's really interesting dynamic happening now is we talked about Pepperdine, and they're going to have, they still have matches on the schedule again with Cal, USC, UCLA, Stanford. Now Pepperdine is the coup that Pepperdine used to see the Pac-12 schools as.
Yeah.
Like Pepperdine in the WCC.
They're the rankings boost.
They're the rankings boost that, like, if UCLA gets that win over Pepperdine, they're going to be more inside the top 16. You're talking like maybe 12-ish. Same thing with USC. USC's right now on the outside looking in that top eight. They get a win over Pepperdine?
That's well said, because now you've beaten them. You've beaten Michigan. Yeah.
And Stanford, they all have as well. But that's a conference match. But yeah, it's interesting here out in California.
It's interesting, Matt. That's why, like, on the men's side this weekend, no one was rooting harder for USC when they had TCU at 3-all, when they had Texas down 4 first sets in singles. No one was rooting harder for USC than everyone in the freaking country, because they were like, come on, like, we have a USC win. We can do this. and it's just like, I wish we could see that publicized on Twitter, where like Roditi is tweeting like, you got this, Trojans, knock off the Longhorns, or like Dustin Taylor after Oklahoma State beat USC, where they're like, come on, Trojans, let's give me that. Again, plenty of women's examples I could have turned to as well. That was just the most recent in my head. But update for the state of California, 4 top 16 teams, Pepperdine, USC, UCLA, Cal, Stanford would be 5, so 5. Maybe San Diego's a 6th?
Yeah, I'd put it at like 4.5.
Okay, I feel like that's about fair.
Because you probably expect maybe one of them to get tripped up. The SEC has a few schools there at like 16 through 20 that could pop in, so yeah.
I agree. It's a very fascinating state, and we will continue to offer updates on it throughout the course of these shows. Next up, and I teased this in the intro, and we're going to do this one really quickly. I ask you again, Jay, how good is Miami? Like, they're becoming this year's UCLA for me, because they beat Notre Dame, they beat Louisville, both matches forced indoors, something this Miami team is never its most comfortable when playing. The Notre Dame match was 3 hours, 3.5 hours, like, first of all, Posner up 5-2 in the first set, drops it 7-5. Then she's down 7-5, 5-love in the second set. She forces a third at 3. That match doesn't ultimately end up finishing by the time of clinch, as Fenning, Nong Shin Yi had worked their way back. Louisville really pushed Miami as well in singles just about everywhere. And yet this Miami team still had a team match point on UNC. Like, they are still finding ways to win, and they've still played fewer than 10 matches. And so, Jay, I'm just like, who are you, Miami? What is this team? I don't know, but they're fascinating. They're always a fascinating watch.
And you can say all of that about their number one player, Alexa Noel. Now, who takes out Fiona Crawley? She's losing to Notre Dame. You know, it's a mixed bag there. And with that comes the questions around Miami. I'm a little flummoxed by your fascination with this Miami team, because the answer is like, not that good.
I don't know, but they grind. Like, they just, like, they are death by 10,000 paper cuts. And I just like that team. That team always has a place in my rotation of watches.
Yeah, but, like, they're in this top, they could be in the top 16 hunt, right? They need a few scalps here towards the end of the season. So, like, all right.
Yeah, I guess it's the whole ACC in general. It's just, like, there's a lot of balance. Like, everyone, a lot of 4-3s this year. A lot of just, again, I don't know the tier system. I just, there's a lot of clumped up tiers right now. And I don't even, like, is Miami tier 3, 2, 4? Like, it really just depends on the day.
Tiers in the ACC super hard right now.
Yeah. And
who's tier 1?
Virginia?
Like, Virginia.
Maybe UNC, just because they haven't lost yet.
But then
yet?
Tier 2, like, what do you do with NC State?
Yeah, 100%. Wake Forest has been kind of frisky. Like, they come back and beat Syracuse.
Right.
Duke is Duke. Florida State has looked solid, but then Notre Dame knocks them off 4-3 at home on Friday. What a weekend it was. They spent 7 hours on court, did Notre Dame this past weekend through 2 matches, which is just ridiculous. But yeah, I just, again, the ACC right now, a little bit funky. Quickly to rapid fire through some other results. If these teams make the NCAA tournament this past weekend, a big reason why. Northwestern sweeps over Maryland and Rutgers. Excuse me, Illinois does the same thing, sweeps over Rutgers, Maryland. Charlotte, 2 big wins over Wichita State, Denver, respectively. And then tough weekend for FAU as they drop matches to BU, UTSA, and Yale. You know, some of the other matches I mentioned earlier, Wake Forest, they get a sweep over Syracuse, Boston College, respectively. Big victory for Notre Dame, 4-3 over Florida State, who then bounced back the next day. They dropped 4 games in their 3 singles victories over Louisville outdoors. I was impressed by what I saw from the Seminoles. Undefeated weekend for OK State. Oklahoma 4-3 at the conclusion over UCF. Wisconsin beat Minnesota. I just haven't had Wisconsin love in a while. 2-0 weekend for Wichita State. They beat Denver and Liberty. That's really all I got for you, Jay. Any final thoughts on any of the other results we saw from the weekend?
Well, it was good for Charlotte to get the win over Denver. That's their second best win right now. Unfortunately for them, a lot of their losses have come to teams that are ranking wise not as good as they typically are, right? Sure. So that's adding up their loss points. Like Duke being 24 does not help Charlotte. Kentucky 64, so they've racked up a lot of surprising loss points, but they're gonna need to find some wins to find themselves inside the bubble this year.
Well said. With that in mind, though, that's everything result wise from a busy week 10 in the college tennis universe. And with the conclusion of another week, Jay, comes the founding or the release of our Cracked Rackets top 10.
Well, not every week,
so,
apparently.
No, moving forward, though. So, with that said, we have our top 10. We are a voter short. That voter knows who they are. You're banned this week. I'm sorry, my friend. That said, five of our six voters did turn back their ballots, so we have something for you. Quickly, though, before, here's what the ITA rankings look like right now. Oklahoma State 1, Michigan 2. Haven't had any movement there in quite some time. Pepperdine up to 3. That's notable. Stanford 4, Virginia 5, UNC 6, Texas at 7, Georgia back up to that number 8 spot, USC at 9, Cal at 10. You have A&M 11, Florida 12, Ohio State 13, NC State falling to 14 in the rankings this past week, South Carolina up to 15, and your final top 16 seed as of right now would be UCLA, who edges out San Diego, Auburn, Miami for that final spot. I don't hate those rankings right now, Jay. I think, you know, again, Stanford, Pepperdine, I'd probably flip those two things. I still have Virginia above UNC in my individual top 10 rankings. I have Texas a little bit higher than both of those two teams. I think 7's too low for them, given the resume we've seen from the Longhorns. But directionally, like, that's my top 8. Those are my top 8 schools, even if it's in a different order. I like where the ITA rankings sit right now. What say you?
Yeah, I agree. Directionally good.
100%. I even like the top 16 selections as well. Here, though, Jay, is our Cracked Rackets top 10 rankings. You start at number 1, it's Oklahoma State. Number 2 right now in the Cracked Rackets rankings, Michigan. Number 3, Stanford. 4, UVA. Still at our number 4 spot. 1 point lead over UNC, who has a 1 point lead over 6th place Texas. So again, top 3, Oklahoma State, Michigan, Stanford. It's been that way for a while. We now have UVA 4, UNC 5, Texas 6, Pepperdine's our 7, wow. Georgia our 8. The absence of this one voter's poll, I'm going to remove that, and I'm going to say Cal is our 9, and NC State is our 10 right now, because this voter who didn't turn in their ballot has A&M too high, and I just haven't adjusted accordingly, so they're going to get the boot. Cal is at number 9, NC State at 10, USC, Oklahoma right behind them alongside of this A&M squad. What say you, Jay?
Well, I think the most notable difference there between the ITA rankings is we have Pepperdine at 7, and Pepperdine's up to 3 in the ITA rankings. I think the other thing is, seems like we're not punishing NC State for their bad weekend and their loss to Syracuse. Keeping them in the top 10 is surprising when the ITA has them at 14. So those are the two things that stuck out with me in our top 10.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's the difference? I guess if NC State played A&M right now, who'd you pick?
Right now, A&M.
What if NC? That's interesting. That's a 4-3 match. Yeah, I guess I think I'd pick NC State. So I have NC State at 10 right now. I don't feel right dropping them outside of that top 10. The same way it took me a second to drop A&M out of there as well. Part of that's a combination of preseason predictions. But I watched NC State beat UNC in that national indoor quarterfinal. And that win, like, that's still up there in terms of impressive victories, as impressive as what we've seen this season. I don't know, like, the line between Cal at 9 and USC, who's my current 15, I could switch up that order entirely. Like, 9 through 22 right now is a big cluster of who had the best weekend.
Yeah, I texted you that as well when I sent you my rankings. I was like, 10 through 15 is really tough. Like, all of those teams, I mean, toss them in the blender. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like NC State, that's a very bad loss that they deserve to be punished for. These other teams don't have that bad of a loss. It's like really tough. And they don't have the win over UNC, but we'll see. Like, where is
really
UNC?
You're right. No, you're
it's
really
tough.
You're right. It's really
I'm not
tough.
The rankings police on this. I will not be doing that, but I was just surprised.
I also I've held UNC at 6 now for like 5 consecutive weeks, and it still doesn't sit right. It just doesn't. And yet you can't put UNC as the definitive one. You just can't.
No, obviously not.
Yeah, I just
you can't even put them as a 2.
I know. Or 3.
Or 3.
Which just it still just doesn't I guess right now if I ask you who's winning the NCAA tournament, are you picking Oklahoma State?
Right now, I would say yes.
If you weren't picking that,
so
who'd
much,
you pick?
Can we just say everything has broken right for this Oklahoma State team? Like, Brant Meyer out for the season, are obviously hosting. Like, right now, I feel like you have to go Oklahoma State.
It feels like it's team of destiny. It really 100%, just, you're 100%. Absolutely. It just keeps breaking their way. That Michigan is like this team that they've seen a million times too. That we might get a chapter number 6 in the story arc between those two teams, or 5 or whatever chapter we're on now.
And for it to be a Michigan team that's never done this, talk about things breaking right. It's not like you have to face Stanford.
Or,
you know.
Or how about this? A Stanford team that's never done it either. Like, Stanford's done it, but not this Stanford. Like, this is the Blake hasn't won one. Ma's never been past a semifinal. Yep's never been past. None of them have been past a semifinal, which they reached for the first time last year as a core. Like, you have a weakened UNC. You have a bunch of teams that are good, but haven't, even this Texas team is frisky. And yeah, Shavathapan, Zainalova have been there, but the rest of it hasn't. Pepperdine is as experienced top 3-wise, you'd argue, everyone, and yet that group has never made it past the quarters. Like, I guess Czar was in a final, but that's it. Like, it's so interesting right now. It just, you're right. Like, Oklahoma State has to be licking the chops that, wow, this is our year. Like, the window is open. There's just no doubt about it.
And conversely, that might be the worst thing to ever happen to them, to be sitting here on March 19th and be thinking that.
Amen, brother. Amen. And so with that said, let's look at the week ahead, because you know who's going to get tested first and foremost this weekend, Jay? It is your number one Oklahoma State Cowgirls. They've got their toughest road trip left of the season at Texas, literally road trip, because they're staying at home for the NCAA tournament, staying at home for the Big 12 championships, I believe, in Stillwater as well. They're at Texas. They're at Oklahoma this week. Do they go 2-0, Jay? Because if they do, they will be undefeated towards, headed towards tournament play.
Look, I feel very similar about this weekend as I did about that UNC loss to NC State in the ACC championship, as I did about this Ohio State men's loss recently to Texas. Like, I think the pressure of riding on to your home courts as undefeated is just potentially insurmountable. I feel like the best Oklahoma State will lose to Texas and still be a number one seed if they if they don't take a bunch of horrendous losses.
They can lose both these matches and still be the one seed.
100%. And that might not be the worst thing for them. So I think they get it done though. I think they go 2-0. Yeah.
I think at Texas is really tough. That's really tough. But they beat them there last year at Texas, if memory serves me correct. Yeah. That's
haven't figured out why they have to play them again at Texas.
But. They said we're leaving for the SEC now, unless you come on these road trips. The Oklahoma one's interesting to me, because that's like Oklahoma's Super Bowl. It's like, hey, we win this match, we're back in the top 16, and we can stop sweating as hard that the pathway gets a little bit easier. Texas is still top 8 comfortable. They're top 8 curious right now. Top 16.
Are they? I mean, they're 7 right now.
No, excuse me. They're top 16 comfortable. I apologize. For sure. Yeah, they're top 8 curious for sure right now. Oh, I still like their resume. I don't love it. Let me ask you this. Who are you more excited to see? The Oklahoma State duo at Texas at Oklahoma or NC State hosting UNC and Duke?
Oh, Oklahoma State, Texas, and Oklahoma for sure.
Yeah. Is it for sure? Like, well, I mean, first of all, there's just so much history now between these UNC. Yeah, I'm going to let it be on the call. For those two, that's a fair point. I mean, they're all really good matches, Jay. Let's just make some predictions. Oklahoma State at Texas, you're taking the Cowgirls?
I'm taking the Cowgirls, but can Howie pull one on us and make Charlotte KP eligible and just make it real interesting?
Hire the JPJ lawyers. Like, I don't know why they haven't been employed yet.
Sign on to the Reese Brantmeyer suit. Get them involved in this. I mean, get all the lawyers.
No, don't do that, because that'll just piss off the NCAA. KP, stay as far away from that as possible. Yeah, look, Shavatspahn's up a 7-4 love. She closes out that match. We're talking about Oklahoma State maybe in a completely different context right now. So, buckle your seatbelts. Oklahoma State at Oklahoma, who you got?
It was good to see Sherby Nina back in the lineup for Oklahoma. She took a loss, but that was good to see. Look, I think Oklahoma State goes 2-0.
All right, fair enough. UNC at NC State. You taking the Tar Heels to flex? Are we going to see them flex for the first time?
Yeah, I think we're going to see it.
All right. Duke at NC State. Can Duke get frisky?
This is going to be a potential
season definer.
A crazy match. I'm going to go 4-3. Give me Duke. 4-3.
100. That's... I'm so excited. I agree with you 100%. That one's just, it feels funky.
It feels just messy.
Yeah, it feels, yeah, that's well said. Last but not least, my final tier one, and this is sneaky good. USC at Pepperdine. It's a really good match happening this
Very
weekend,
good.
Jay. That's the sneaks into tier one. Who you got and why?
This is at Pepperdine?
At Pepperdine. This match was crazy.
Oh, yeah. 4-3. I mean, these teams know each other so well.
Chai Watt versus Charney. That was one of those moments.
That was
a good regular season match, Jay.
Yeah, it was. But gosh, I thought Pepperdine looked really good against Cal. The doubles is clicking. If they get doubles, it's just so hard. I think USC, ideally they get Naomi Chung back in that lineup. That will help with their depth. Otherwise, I think it's just going to be tough to find even three singles matches, so I go Pepperdine.
Here's what I will say. If USC wins this match, I'm not taking them out of my top eight for the rest of the year. And like, because the Michigan, the Pepperdine wins, or not the rest of the year, but they're now like my favorite non-Stanford West Coast team. Yeah, like, but just because they've been really good. I feel like I'm underrating them. I feel like I haven't appreciated, again, the consistency we've seen from the Trojans throughout, and yet... Yeah, I'm not betting against the Pepperdine doubles, the Pepperdine top three. It's just the confidence in knowing the path for Pepperdine to get through. I think, again, we don't have that one, so I am going to predict it. I'll take Pepperdine as well. I think they're going to take that match 4-2. A lot of good matches in my tier two, by the way.
You know USC lost to UCLA, though, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying if USC beats Pepperdine now it's like kind of like, okay, then everyone can beat everyone. Yeah, because if you recall correctly, we both came on this show and said UCLA is beating USC at UCLA. Just that one screamed a UCLA win. And that, like, I don't think less of USC because of that result, if that makes sense. That was just like UCLA, that was a must-have for the Bruins. And so... Yeah. Yeah, I think that one's going to be really good. But again, also good on our broadcast. Georgia's at Tennessee. That's going to be fun. Georgia Tech at Florida State and Miami. I like that. Can Wake Forest knock off a Duke? Like, I think that match might be sneaky good. Auburn.
When's the last time that happened? I'm going to look that one up.
Yeah, that's probably, I'm going to guess 02. And by 02, I mean 1902. Like, it's been a while.
Maybe the Bea Belloc year is what year did she win? 2003?
Yes, roughly. That feels about correct. Yeah, I'm excited. A lot of good matches throughout the course of the weekend. Of course, we will be back next week to break them all down. Jay, what about you? Are you on the road again this weekend, my friend? Where can fans expect to see you? And what can they expect from No Ad, No Problem?
Well, I'll probably make an appearance at the Stanford matches. They're playing Colorado and Utah this weekend on No Ad, No Problem. On Thursday, you can hear Ethan and I break down the Reese Brantmeyer lawsuit in more detail. We'll also preview a few of the men's matches of the week, some good ones. You've got TCU versus Texas. You've got Kentucky, Texas A&M. So that will be out on Thursday.
Yeah, well, looking forward to hearing it. And certainly, again, you've earned the rest, my friend. So take what you need. And obviously, looking forward to seeing you back on the road later this season as well. Obviously, we've got another busy weekend for you here at Cracked Rackets. ACC, SEC, Big 12 broadcasts, all available on ESPN+. Plus. A shout-out, as always, to our super producer, Daniel Westoff, for the editing job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. A shout-out to him. A shout-out as well to our dear friends at Tennis Point, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. And a thank you to all of you college tennis fans as well who continue to tune in to all of our coverage of the 2024 season. Of course, we will be back tomorrow to break down all the Division I men's action. But for now, for our fantastic co-host, John J. Parsons, our super producer, Daniel Westoff, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Jay, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey, great shot.
And we will see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.